Hello, everybody. Welcome to a new episode of The Dissenter. I'm your host, Ricardo Lopes, and today I'm joined by Dr. Marianne Brandon. She's a clinical psychologist and diplomat in sex therapy. Dr. Brandon is the author of Monogamy, The Untold Story, the e-book Unlocking the Sexy in Surrender, Using the Neuroscience of Power to Recharge Your Sex Life, and co-author of the book Reclaiming Desire. Four keys to finding your lost libido. Dr. Brandon served as a board member for an international sexual health society and also co-hosted the sex therapy radio show called In Bed with Dr. B and Ted. Dr. Brandon is a member of the Massachusetts Psychological Association, the Maryland Psychological Association, the National Register of Health Service Providers in Psychology, the American Association of Sex Educators, Counselors, and Therapists, the Society for Sex Therapy and Research, the International Society for the Study of Women's Sexual Health, the Sexual Medicine Society of North America, and the Human Behavior and Evolution Society, and we will leave it at that. Otherwise, I will be here for another 10 minutes just introducing Dr. Brandon because she has a big CV, I guess. So, Dr. Brandon, thank you a lot for taking the time to come on the show.
My pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
Okay, great. So, I haven't yet touched on the topic that we're going to explore today in the introduction, but in fact, I invited you because Dr. Glenn Gehr posted this very interesting article on Psychology Today. I can't remember the title now, but basically, he was talking about your perspective on sex robots. And I guess that's a very interesting topic to explore. And since you work as a sex therapist and things like that, I guess that because it is a technology that we already have available, and it's also an emerging one because things are going to get better and better with time in terms of, let's say, how the robots are produced and in terms of their interaction with human beings and so on and so forth. So maybe I would like to ask you to start with this question. That is, what is exactly your position when it comes to sex robots? Are you completely against them, or is it a more nuanced position where you might think that perhaps in some situations we could profit from using them?
So absolutely a nuanced position. About 2 years ago, I would have said to you, this is all science fiction. I'm really not interested at all in the topic. And I really was not taking it seriously until I came across a survey of some MIT scientists who were saying, yeah, this is going to happen. And their disagreement was, will sex robots be available in 20 years or 30 years? It wasn't, will this happen and will it have a big impact? So after I read that survey, I thought I really need to get my act together and figure out what's happening here. So I actually went to the Sex and Love with Robots conference in Brussels last month as part of my ongoing research. And I have really, getting back to your question, come to the point of feeling very confident that there will be benefits to this addition to our technological repertoire, but there'll be potential challenges and damages as well. And so I think it's really important for us all to start a dialogue about it. I was really delighted to get your email because if we don't talk about it, it's really just going to happen right under our noses. So much better to be prepared and start to think things through so that we can kind of manage it the way that we feel like would be best for us as opposed to just sort of following with whatever technology, wherever it takes us.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And I don't know if we're going to agree by the end because I have some arguments in favor also, but let's see how it goes.
Okay.
Anyway, I guess that one thing that is very interesting here is that we use the term sex robots. That is, we are thinking about them and producing them just for people to have sex with them, supposedly. But I guess that as they get more and more human-like, then maybe we will get other sorts of issues because I think it's very easy to imagine that people, if they start tricking us in terms of us looking at them and confusing them with real people, then it will no longer be about the sex or just the sex, but it will maybe also include other domains of our emotional psychology, let's say.
Agree. And I do think it's likely that we'll be introduced to sex robots more as companion robots that have the capacity for sex. So that, and then they'll sort of like slowly sort of gain momentum in our marketplace, would be my guess.
So, what are the aspects of human psychology, and in this case of human relationships, sexual relationships, romantic relationships, that you think are relevant to talk about here?
Wow. So there's many pieces here that I think are worth our discussing. And one is simply that relationships are very challenging for people now. I would argue more now than ever. So it may be helpful for us to look at the different trends that are occurring all around us today that I think will likely make sort of pave the way for sex robots to have an easier time joining us. So things like people are more depressed now than they've ever been before. They're more stressed. Suicide rates are up. Social isolation is up. People are living alone more now than they used to. Sexual frequency is down. Rates of sexual concerns and dysfunctions are really high, and they have been for a long time. And all of this is happening in a world now where we have such easy access to alternative partners, and where we can compare ourselves to others who are, for example, on social media, apparently having these fabulous lives. So people are feeling distressed, looking at others who seem to be having a wonderful life and a wonderful romance, and they're feeling like, what's wrong with me? So people are struggling. I see it in my practice all the time. And so, you know, your question initially was what's relevant perhaps in our relationships that sort of opens the door. I think what people want is feelings of safety and security with a romantic partner. They want to feel some adventure and excitement. They want to feel loved. You know, how many people are really achieving this in their relationships right now? That's part of the concern here for me.
And do you think that there will be any relevant sex difference in terms of how people will deal with this kind of technology? Because I've already had a lot of evolutionary psychologists on the show, and there are very concrete, at least in some domains, very concrete sex differences. And in the sexual domain, I mean, men tend to be more sexually driven than women, and they tend to prefer more sexual variety, and they are a bit more promiscuous when they can, of course. So, do you think that maybe when it comes to sex robots, they might affect men more than women?
I absolutely do, and this is one of my primary concerns. So when I became a therapist, I was a generalist, but as I transitioned into sex therapy, I too became an evolutionary therapist or evolutionary psychologist because it was really the only way I could understand these very real differences I was seeing between men and women. So I sort of started my career thinking, you know, all genders are more the same than different. But as I worked, at least with heterosexual couples and long-term relationships, wow, women would say the same things in my therapy room. Men would say the same things, and they were often in opposition. So it's absolutely true what you're saying that you know, men engage in a much wider, diverse range of sexual behavior. They desire more variety, more partners. They evidence more sexual problems and around, or let's say, more what word am I looking for? Paraphilias, for example. So they're more interested in unique sexual expressions and things like that. So all of that's very true. And I see it, I understand it from a perspective of the triune brain. That's a very basic sort of map of the brain that shows our very early evolution of our neuroanatomy was what we call the primal or reptilian brain. And that's a part of the brain we share with other mammals. And that's where sexual instincts may derive from. And it's in that space that males and females can express different their sexuality. It gets expressed differently. Not from our more modern, cerebral cortex. We can all behave and experience the world very similarly from our more evolved brain. But it's that basic primal part of our sexuality that does get expressed differently, and sex robots will be more compelling to the male primal brain. And I can explain that further if you want, but I feel very clear about that.
Mm-hmm. So, before we get into the specific issues where sex robots might affect men and maybe also some of the advantages that they might bring, that is something that I want to discuss with you, let me just ask you this, because it seems to me that we are not really that sure yet about the real impact that sex robots might have on society, that at least some of this is very speculative, because just to compare it, certain things that people are saying or speculating about with other types of technology that we already had, like, for example, when people developed mass distributed pornography, let's say, and video games, particularly the more violent ones, there were always people saying that, oh, this will have negative effects on people, particularly men, because it happens that violent video games and pornography are directed mostly at men, and crime rates will increase, and there will be more sexual crime when it comes, for example, to pornography, or men will be more, it will be harder for men to establish normal sexual relationships with women and things like that. But I'm not sure about all of that, but at least some of those things didn't realize, let's say, like, for example, the correlation between playing violent video games and crime rates, because in fact people have been playing more and more violent video games and crime rates have been plummeting over time. And even when it comes to pornography, if we are worried about things like sexual violence or sexual crime, it also doesn't seem to track the use of pornography. So, do you also take that into account or not? That maybe we have to be somewhat careful about some of the things that we are projecting or speculating about.
So absolutely, and I appreciate you bringing that point up, because it's so true that everything I'm saying is speculation, and the world will be different. If we go with this concept of this might happen in 20 years, our environment will be different. Our world will be different. We're not just talking about who we are right now in the environment that's right outside our door. And I don't mean just literally the trees environment, but I mean like the social environment and the technology available. So much, there are going to be so many variables that we can't predict that are going to come together in several decades. So yes, we're speculating about so much when we talk about this. I absolutely agree with that. And to your point, with regards to like the impact of porn and the impact of violent video games, what we see is there's a subset, a minority subset of people in each of these categories that are vulnerable to negative effects from them. And I would expect the same with sex robots. There will be hopefully a minority of people that will have a negative effect from that, but many people who report that they benefit from them, just like many people report their relationships benefit from porn. I would anticipate we'll see that sort of reaction.
Mm-hmm, right. So it's interesting that you bring up individual differences, because I guess that I mean, as we know, there are many more men than women that have issues when it comes to socialization. And even we know from the literature, for example, from the work by Simon Baron Cohen, that men tend to be systemizers and women empathizers. And so, I mean, there are many men out there that are not that good at socializing. And with that comes also the fact that maybe it's harder for them to get into romantic relationships because they can't even interact properly with women for some reason or another. So, do you think that it could be the case that it would be that specific subset of men that would adopt this technology earlier? And also because maybe some of them are not that interested in interacting with other people. And I mean, even when it comes to that, maybe we're not sure that that's completely bad. I mean, they might just want to live their lives like that. And I mean, if they work and if they feel happy about it, I mean, what do you think about that?
I think that's a very reasonable hypothesis that they would be perhaps the first group to embrace sex robots, and I agree with you. What's wrong with that? Like, if they're happy with it and they're not hurting anyone, good for them.
Right. And I guess that there's another element here that is important for us to talk about. That is, so we can think about the negative impacts that this kind of technology might have on people that use it directly. But there's also the issue of how society looks at people that use that kind of technology in terms of, for example, I imagine that whenever people nowadays are exposed in the media to people that already live with sex robots or something like that, that they tend to moralize those people and to condemn them in some way or another because they are not used to that kind of thing. So it could also be that some of the negative effects that people might have from using that technology might come from other people condemning them or something like that, right?
So, right, I understand what you're saying makes sense. My inclination is to believe that, most of the sex robots won't be discussed openly. People aren't necessarily going to say, I just got a sex robot, my husband just got a sex robot. Like, that's kind of something, like, people don't necessarily say, wow, my husband watches so much porn. People keep this stuff to themselves. So I think that people will get them and not tell others. Couples won't tell others. And so they'll just sort of become a part of people's lives and no one else will know it. So I'm not so sure that the moralizing that I'm sure will be there that you're talking about is going to have that much impact on people.
Yeah, maybe in terms of people that would adopt that technology, feeling somewhat guilty for doing that because other people don't do it or other people talk about it in negative ways.
Well, that's an interesting question. People do all kinds of things sexually that they feel quite guilty about or quite ashamed about, but they still do it. So I'm still in the camp of they're going to do it anyway. They're going to buy robots anyway. Even if they feel uncomfortable about it, I think many people will still move forward with it.
So, I mean, this is very complicated also because our societies are also changing, and particularly since women got access to university and to the workplace. And of course, I'm not saying that that's a negative thing, that's obviously positive, but anyway, it changed the dynamics in the mate market, let's say, in the sense that. And this is also something that we know from evolutionary psychology. I mean, women tend to be hypergamous in the sense that they tend only to prefer mating with men that are at least of the same socioeconomic status as them, or even above them. So, mm-hmm. and I guess that one of the things here is that more and more men and boys to put it another way, there are more and more women in college, and on the reverse side of things, there are less and less men in terms of percentage in college, for example. And so life for men in the mating market has become a little bit harder than before because of the reasons that I just exposed. And yeah. So could it be the case that at least some of these could be, that some of those men that can't get a partner could benefit from sex robots, and would that be positive or not?
You know, where my mind goes as you're talking is this whole topic begs the question of, do we need each other, and right. mm-hmm. are we replaceable? Are humans replaceable, and do we need each other? And that's an element of what you're speaking to right now. I think that it's a reasonable hypothesis you're throwing out, that this is a group of men that will benefit, will find comfort with sex robots and satisfaction with sex robots. I wouldn't argue that.
Mm-hmm. Right. So you don't agree that that them replacing a real human partner mm-hmm. with a robot that could be in any way positive for them if they, for some reason or another, can't have access to a real woman, for example?
Mm-hmm. I think many of them would perceive that as positive. You know, we might analyze it and say, well, they're learning perhaps a narcissistic relationship style, and perhaps they won't develop the skills they need to have a relationship with a human. We may see that as a problem, but if they don't see it as a problem, I can't say that it's a problem. And anyway, human relationships are super challenging. So maybe they don't want to take that on. I mean, people struggle. We all know, you know, you have to make your relationship a priority and all of that. And people are really challenged by it. Maybe those men don't feel like they've got the energy or desire to work out a human relationship the way it needs to, or work with one in order for it to be satisfying. So, you know, I'm not one to judge, I think. As long as no one's being hurt and they feel satisfied by it. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say it's so black and white, like I'm not concerned, but
right.
I wouldn't intervene.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let me just tell you about a list of advantages at the individual level that I came up with, just to see if you agree with them or not. So okay. I wrote here, these are the advantages at the individual level: sexual satisfaction, guaranteed sexual access and satisfaction, tricking the brain to believing that it was real sex, and lowering the levels of testosterone, again talking about men, and reduced aggressiveness and predisposition to violence.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think, yes, I get all that. And I also think, you know, there's a group of folks who are disabled that'll very much benefit from sex robots. For example, someone who's intellectually disabled and is an adult and can't live with his parents any longer, or his parents aren't alive. And so, you know, the best place for him would be a group home, but if he doesn't have a solid understanding of how to deal with his sexual urges, he can't be in a group home. Whereas a sex robot, because he would take advantage of other group members, for example, but a sex robot could give him what he needs in order to be able to stay in that environment. So those are some real advantages as well. Or someone who's physically disabled and is having a hard time finding a partner. So I would add those to the list you just gave.
Mm-hmm. So, perhaps this is a bit more controversial because we live in individualistic societies, but there could also be benefits at a collective level. I guess it is a bit controversial also because we're saying, oh, okay, those men, there they can't have access to women, so we'll just give them sex robots to please them, and they won't be violent or won't disturb society. So it seems a bit cold and harsh, and I mean, it seems that we are not caring about them. We will just give them a toy or something just for them to play with it, and for them to not bother other people. But I mean, I've had Dr. Martin Daly on the show, and he and Margot Wilson studied the phenomenon where in societies that have high rates of economic inequality, that men that are at the lower bottom of the distribution, I mean, they tend to resort to more risky, violent strategies also to acquire status and then have access to women. And so do you think that we could use sex robots perhaps to try to prevent that kind of thing occurring, admitting that we will have so economically unequal societies?
So this is hard for my brain to go there, frankly, because when I think of the future, I think that, you know, it's almost impossible to know how societies really will be structured. So that's almost laying what we understand now and taking it in 20 years, and I feel like that feels tricky to me to give you a solid response. I don't really have one on that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so could we now go back to the disadvantages that you pointed to and perhaps talk a little bit more about them? One of them, let me just go back here. One of them was that intimacy in relationships is dropping, right? So could you tell us more about that, and why is that a problem?
Well, I love this question. It is a problem because from my perspective as a sex therapist, you know, I work with couples every day who are struggling with their intimate relationship emotionally or sexually. And sex is the most intimate act that people engage in their relationship or in life. And if we remove that, it's a glue that keeps romantic relationships together. And it's the only piece of a romantic relationship that distinguishes it from other relationships. It's when we're most vulnerable. So when we are vulnerable and accepted, that's when we feel really loved. So sex provides all of that to a couple. And as we're seeing this sexual frequency going down, to me, I worry that that means that couples are feeling less connected, less close, and that's going to have an impact on us in all kinds of ways. So when people are satisfied with their sex life, they're more satisfied with their relationship, but they're more satisfied with life in general. So, you know, it correlates with a lot of really important stuff. When people feel sexually connected, they feel alive, they feel vital. These are the words they use. So this is the secret sauce. We don't want to see that go away, as far as I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm. And would that have any implications in how people establish relationships, not just with their romantic partners, but also with other people?
So are you asking sex robots? Will that have implications? I'm not sure what your question is.
Okay, my question is, if we remove intimacy or sexual intimacy from relation or from human relationships, if that could also have implications in terms of how people establish other sorts of relationships with other people?
That's an interesting question. So, you know, I think that when people, people can have sex or they can make love. And I think most couples need both to have a creative relationship. But that making love opens people's hearts. It warms them. It softens them. And that's a necessary part of our relating in the world more generally. So if we stop that, I would be worried that we would all become sort of colder and less compassionate, because, you know, that we're kind of coming out of our hearts, it seems to me.
Mm-hmm. So another point, at least that Dr. Gehr referred in his article, is that the prevalence of marriage and birth rates may well see declining numbers. So they are already declining, but Do you think that with sex robots they could decline even further?
Well, it's a hypothesis that strikes me as reasonable because, so if men are ejaculating with robots, they're going to be not ejaculating with a human, and that would mean potential for birth rates going down. So, you know, that's a possibility.
Mm-hmm. And do you look at that as an individual or a collective problem or both?
Wow. So I think that it's going to depend on how attractive sex robots are for people. Are they just, you know, appealing to a certain subset of the population, or are they really exciting for the vast majority of people? That's the big question, I guess. So it's really going to depend on how many people find them compelling.
Yeah, but I guess that my question was more if you think that not having children, I mean, if you're worried about the effects that might have at the individual level, because I guess that people derive a lot of meaning in their lives from having children and establishing a family and things like that, right?
So if people aren't having the ability to nurture and tend to care for children, what will that mean for them? Mm-hmm. That's a great question, because that's a place where people get tremendous meaning. So if people are having less children, then those needs will not be fulfilled.
Mm-hmm. And okay, so now moving on to other topics, do you think that sex robots in any way at a psychological level would resemble sexual experiences like, for example, masturbation?
So will they resemble at a psychological level? My first response may feel convoluted, but hopefully it'll get us back to where you're at.
Sure, no problem.
Okay. So, you know, what I think of as you say that is virtual reality. So virtual reality, for those viewers who haven't experienced it in the ways that it really can be offered today, it captivates the entire person, and you really believe it's happening. I walked a plank in virtual reality just across a floor, and I couldn't even take a step, really. It was so scary. It was over a New York City highway, and I was laughing. Like, I had these glasses on, and I knew where I was. I was on the ground floor of a building, but my body thought I was 60 feet or 60 floors in the air, and I couldn't move. So our bodies respond, even if our minds know it's fake, right? So I think that robots have the potential to offer much more than masturbation, because robots will be a much more full body experience. And the more we replicate reality, the further we're going to fall into it as if it's real, even if we know it's not. So I do think sex with a robot is likely to be more intense than masturbation.
Mm-hmm. That bit about them tricking our brains is very interesting. Do you think that it would in any way be possible for us in the future, if we develop more and more human-like robots, more realistic ones, both in terms of appearance and behavior, that if people are to establish relationships with them, because in all aspects and parameters they would resemble a human and we wouldn't even be able to distinguish them properly unless someone told us? I mean, do you think that we could develop the same kinds of relationships and even social skills by interacting with them?
I do. And I think that they don't even have to be indistinguishable from human for us to relate to them like they are human. The way I understand this is more through science, as I grappled with this question myself. So it kind of takes us to, for example, what is love? Like, can we love a robot? Mm-hmm. Well, I think that we can look at love as a neurotransmitter response in our brain. Bottom line, from a biological perspective, that's what's going on. We have a reaction in our brain and we interpret it as a feeling. And I don't know why we couldn't have that reaction with the robot and interpret it as love. So I, even if you know it's a robot, it's still a reaction in your brain. I mean, we have a reaction to our pets. And we, so I think that it's not going to be that hard to trick us. I don't even think we need to be tricked. I think it's, these are responses that we're biologically oriented to have. We're going to have orgasms with something. We're going to associate pleasure with something, vulnerability that feels intimate. Like, it's all going to, I think it has the potential to cascade in such a way that we really will experience them as human, even if, even though we know they're not.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing here, right? Because, I mean, if our brain processes stimuli that we are receiving from the robot and interprets them as being a human or associates them with a human, I mean, at the end of the day, if it is convincing enough, would it make any difference even in how people establish romantic relationships? I mean, do you think that if they trick us well enough, or even if they don't need to trick us, but that we process the information the same way and we interact with them the same way, that we would lose something from that still?
So I would believe that. But I'm also, that I would believe that we're losing something. And I think most people would probably agree. If I asked 20 people, would you rather be loved by a robot or loved by a human, or feel love with a robot or feel love with human? I mean, people are going to opt for human, I would think. Even in the future, I sort of imagine that. But here's the thing. Robots are as perfect as we want them to be. So they don't have bad days and they don't say no to sex. You know, and they never say anything that shames us, nor will they feel ashamed if you say, hey, let's do this. They'll be like, great. So, you know, there's a lot that robots will offer that may make them different from human, but equally appealing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and that's interesting, because I guess that one of the things that I have on my mind is that, okay, so let me just think about it for a bit, because this is a bit complicated, but I guess that, I was just thinking, so if we have something that is pretty close to a human, okay, so this is perhaps a bit more wild speculation, but at a certain point, we would also have to worry about how people deal with those machines, that at the end of the day, for all intents and purposes, they would be sentient beings as well, and pretty similar to humans. I mean, we wouldn't be sure about the kinds of subjective mental experiences that they would have, but we would have to, because of the way they behave and because of the way they look, if they are similar to human beings, for all intents and purposes, we would have to try to deal with them and treat them the same way.
Mm-hmm. Well, people do speculate that, you know, down the road, there are lots of scientists and AI folks that say, yeah, that robots eventually will have emotions like humans. That's a big leap for me. I'm not ready to go there. But I think part of what you're asking is, if they look and act human, are we required to treat them as human, even if they're not sentient? And that's a huge controversy right now. Like, do the issue of consent, if the robot appears human, even if we know it's not and it doesn't have emotion, do we still need to behave as if they're human to maintain our appropriate social standards? Yeah, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really, really complicated. Let me just ask you one. Let me just ask you one question. That this might be okay. It might seem that I'm teasing you a little bit, but it's not that. I was just wondering if maybe when women talk about these things, because there are a lot of feminists, for example, that worry about sex robots and also pornography and things like that, and they say that because men are exposed to that, then they might objectify women more. Or something like that. I mean, they have a lot of different arguments, but that is one that comes up a lot of the time. But do you think that maybe, in a sense, we should expect more skepticism from women when it comes to the impacts that sex robots might have on society because they are more tailored for men, and I mean, it's more men that want to have more sexual variety or that perhaps are not interested in socializing and prefer to have direct access to sex and things like that.
I do think that women have reason to be more concerned than men do around this, and that they are and will be for many reasons. So yes, robots objectify women, and they are primarily, like we talked about earlier, they're going to be more compelling for men. So it's not just that they're being created for men. I feel pretty confident that when they're created for women, and they will be, and sex dolls are today, they'll be available, but the market won't be there. So they're not going to sell as much. And some women will love their sex robots, no doubt. But ultimately, they will be more appealing to men. So the market will bear that, though. There will be more created for men, and they do objectify women. And I do think women want, potentially, because of evolutionary reasons that we sort of touched on earlier, women want more from a romantic relationship or a partner than men may. That's probably a controversial statement to make, but from when we go back to sort of the primal brain and primal sexual instincts, women have reason to be more particular about their partners and need more than just a sexual release from their partner. Whereas from that primal brain place, men don't have as complicated needs around sex. And we can go into that further if you want to. But basically, because of that, from a very basic instinctual perspective, robots are going to be what we call supernormal stimuli. If you've had evolutionary therapists on here before, they've talked about it. So supernormal stimuli basically captures what we're instinctively oriented to desire and amplifies it. So we see this all around today in food, for example. It's everywhere. So, you know, instead of a blueberry, we've got a blueberry candy that's, you know, 1,000% magnified in blueberry, and so that's where people go to. We long for this man-made supernormal stimuli. That's what we eat. That's why the obesity epidemic is so real today, because so much of our food has become supernormal stimuli. It's not what you pick in the garden anymore. And sex robots will be that. Porn is that too. We have this all around us, but sex robots will be supernormal stimuli oriented more for men than for women.
Yeah, I guess that when it comes to sex differences in mate preferences, I guess this is a bit of a joke, but in terms of programming sex robots for women, I mean, I guess that for men, they would have to follow a pornographic script, but for women, they would have to follow more of a script from a romance novel or something like that, right?
Right. That's yes. I think there's real truth to that. Someone told me a joke recently. Maybe everyone knows it. I don't know. I thought it was amusing. He said, "Sex is like pizza. You know, there's better pizzas, but there's no bad pizza." Now, that's really something I didn't say to him. You know what? A woman would never say that. Women would definitely say, "You know, there's bad sex. Boring sex is bad." You don't really hear that from men so much. So expectations are different, and what we need from our partners can be different.
Yeah, you were referring to, for example, how men and women deal differently with sex and how they are stimulated differently and they process different stimuli differently.
Yeah.
So, for example, I guess that we could say that men are a bit more imagistic in the sense that they are easily triggered just by looking at a female body or something like that. And women instead need more of an emotional, relational component there. I mean, it's much easier for men just to do sex with a complete stranger that they find physically appealing, but not so much for women, right?
I think that that's really true. So, and that comes back to evolution. So women take into account the relationship, the context that sex is in. So for example, as a sex therapist, I hear comments in my office all the time, women saying, you know, I can't have sex in the house when the kids are in the house. It's just really distracting for me. I don't hear that from men. Or I'll hear a woman say, you know, I don't like to have sex after dinner. I'm so bloated. You know, I don't hear that from men. So there are many women will say, I can't have sex when he wears that outfit. I hate that outfit, and I've told him not to wear it. And I can't have sex when he wears, right? But I don't hear that from men. So there are these really come down to our evolutionary differences, but they play out in very real ways in our day-to-day lives. And that's, I think, what you were referring to.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So let me just ask you one last question before we go. We've been talking about the effects that sex robots might have at on an individual level, both on men and women, and also on a more collective societal level. But what about cross-sexual influences, in the sense that, okay, so if men use sex robots, could that also translate into an impact on at the level of women? I mean, could that also negatively influence women in the sense, like, for example, men are not as available to establish romantic relationships or sexual relationships with them, or they might even, because I guess that women care a lot about their physical appearance, and if we can just produce a robot that is basically perfect in terms of appearance, then they might be affected by that somewhat, because I mean, even if they don't want to, sex robots would also be competing indirectly with women in the mating market, right?
Mm-hmm. So yes, I do anticipate that this will have sex robots. People will say they've been benefited, they've been harmed, but people will all have reactions, I believe. And I would anticipate that women will have reactions that they will impact women's lives, even if women don't have a robot themselves. And I do worry about things like mutual respect. So what I think will happen is this supernormal stimuli shows up for men, they're attracted to it. Women are understandably going to lose respect for men around that. It's not going to make sense to women, because unless they have a full understanding of this primal brain that we've been referring to, they're just going to think that's evidence of superficiality, etc. And I think the gender divide could just continue. And then as we become less tolerant of each other and less accepting of each other, that's a sad state of affairs. I mean, that's unfortunate if that's where we head. So my hope is something different, frankly. My hope is that we kind of recognize the trickiness here in a way that we didn't recognize the trickiness of food before it showed up on our, you know, on our table, the extraordinary sugary, salty things that we can't get in nature, but now we're all thinking about it all the time and wanting to eat it, right? So we didn't anticipate it with food, but let's anticipate it with sex robots and understand it. And perhaps we could take each other less for granted, would really be my hope, because, you know, if we can get these needs met in other ways, rather than use that as a reason to disregard people, maybe we say, wow, like, this is really precious what we have here. This love or this potential for love is super precious, and let's cultivate it and take it really seriously. Let's make it a priority. And I think people can do that. So that's my hope, that it'll kind of be a bit of a wake-up call, because right now we're just like insulting each other left and right these days, and you know, there's more and more disconnect. So my hope is it's a wake-up call for us to all say, okay, well, at least with this relationship, I'm going to take really good care of it.
So just one last thing. Earlier we talked about children, and I mean the impact that not having children might have on people's lives, both again on an individual and on a collective level. But I guess that also there we have an important sex difference. That is, it seems to me that it's much easier for men to go without having children than for women. And I guess that if men are not as available to establish those sorts of relationships that are the ones where women want to have a child with the men, then if they don't have even access to other resources, I mean, they have, of course, but they might not want to have a child being a single parent, or at least not having had a sexual relationship with the man. So, I mean, that's also another issue that we have to take into account, right?
Well, you know, one of the things I wonder is, I'm not, this sort of like this instinct or drive to, you know, pass our genes on is very real, I think, for everyone. And one of the things I wonder, if it's not so much that we see this drive more in women, it's that women have a biological clock that they work against, so they can become, you know, very concerned about that issue early in their lives, where men are able to address that issue throughout their lives. So I think that might be more the difference than it being more of an, I don't know. I really don't know. This is a guess.
Right. Okay. So I guess we are speculating a lot on this episode, and that's normal, because I mean we haven't had a massive deployment of sex robots in any society. I guess that maybe China will get there first, because they are they don't care that much about the effects that technology have on people. They just want to run their society and make money. So anyway, so. Dr. Brendan, before we go, would you like to tell people about what might be some of the best places on the internet for them to learn more about your work?
So I would say my website, which is drbrandon.net, and I have books and lectures and stuff all available there. And I'm also on Twitter. So if you like this topic, follow me on Twitter. I speak not just to sex robots, but across the board around sexual issues. But it's fun, and I'd love to have everybody join me there.
Okay, great. So I will be leaving that in the description box of the interview for people to go and check it out. It's very interesting. And also, of course, the link to Dr. Gare's article and others for people to also read it. And so, Dr. Brendan, again, it was really a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you for taking the time. And maybe somewhere in the future we could do other episodes to talk about other aspects of human relationships, and who knows, even other kinds of emergent technology. I don't know.
I'd be delighted. Thank you.
Hi everybody, thank you for watching this interview until the end. As you might have noticed, I've started this channel in February 2018 and have been putting out regular interviews with academics and intellectuals from a variety of fields. To keep the channel sustainable, I would like to ask you to please visit my Patreon page and to consider making a pledge there. If you don't like Patreon, you also have the alternatives of Subscribestar and PayPal. All of the links are in the description box of the video. Otherwise, and if you like what I'm doing, please share it, leave a like, and hit the subscription button. I would also like to give a huge thank you to my patrons, Karen Litzke, Anne Blanchett, Perelga Larsen, Lau Guerrero, Santel Gelinas, Francis Ford, Hans Frederick Sunda, Brian Rivera, Lucas Stafiniak, Sergio Gondriano, Janne Eninen, Ricardo Vladimiro, Craig Healy, John Connors, Adam Castle, Vega Giddy, Doctors Jerry Muller, Herbert Gintis, Rutger Voss, and Bo Weingard, and also my three producers, Izar Webb, Rosie, and Jim Frank. Thank you for all.